This is Brother Michael A. Smith, a voice for Freemasonry, bringing to you the Short Talk Bulletin, published monthly by the Masonic Service Association of North America since 1923. Volume 51, number 6, from June of 1973. That Noble Contention. Author unknown. A Mason is instructed to use the trowel to spread the cement of brotherly love and affection, that cement which unites us into one sacred band or society of friends and brothers, among whom no contention should exist, save that noble contention, or rather emulation, of who best can work and best agree. This statement is typical of 18th century style and composition, especially in didactic philosophical writing. Ideas are compacted. Nouns are freighted with developing thought. No contention. That word suggests conflict, struggle, dissension, quarrel, feud. The candidate may have overlooked the possible good in contention, the valuable byproducts of striving to excel. So, contention must be qualified as that noble contention, to make clear that Masonic contention is not a quarrel, but a constructive rivalry. Even so, the initiate may still have missed the point. A noble contention may also be misunderstood as a quixotic pursuit of an impossible dream. Contention needs to be clarified, for Masonic ideals are not an unreachable goal. Emulation is the word, for emulation is the ambition or desire to equal or excel another. And that's the proper business of a speculative Mason, to pursue excellence, especially for himself. The thought has taken us a considerable distance from the simple object called a trowel. It has gone beyond the symbolic meaning of that tool, to spread the cement of brotherly love, to emphasize the commitment of a master Mason, to improve himself in Masonry by striving to excel others in exemplifying brotherly love. Such a development of ideas is called speculation. We work in speculative Masonry only. The instruction ends by emphasizing work, especially the voluntary and united efforts of the members of a lodge of Master Masons, those who best can work and best agree. But work for what? The instruction fails to specify. It needs amplification. The candidate needs to be informed of the kinds of work which that noble contention or emulation requires. Implicit in the instruction is the idea that a Mason must seek to improve himself morally and spiritually, that he must strive to emulate the finest examples of character and conduct which his experience and studies have presented to his discerning eye. That is a broad area for Masonic education, which too few lodges spade for interesting programs for good and wholesome instruction. It embraces thoughts and concepts, food for speculation, which may range from the golden rule to the most modern evaluation of a social problem and its consequences. Masonic emulation requires speculation, but very few lodges engage regularly in such an activity. This may be one of the problems of the craft today. There is too little noble contention in the lodge. Meetings have become sterile performances of the ritual or routine business without the stimulation of emulation to become well-informed brethren. But to work in agreement implies more than a solitary pursuit of excellence. It implies a common effort on the part of a group, the members of a lodge, to promote the goals of Freemasonry. There is only one place for such emulation, the lodge at labor, whether for business, for degree work, for instruction, for speculation, or for social intercourse and fellowship. Much of the Masonic concern over poor attendance and loss of members has failed to explore the lack of noble contention, or rather emulation, in the activities of an average lodge. May it not be time to emphasize the need for such striving on the part of the members of a lodge, especially of the newly made Master Masons? May it not be time to inform them clearly and specifically that the lodge expects something from them, that a well-governed lodge requires some participation by them in the meetings and activities of the lodge. Some brothers will immediately protest that a Mason's participation in the labors of the lodge must be purely voluntary, of his own free will and accord, and will cite the statement in the charge to the candidate in the first degree. It is not meant that Masonry should interfere with your necessary vocations, for these are on no account to be neglected. But the same charge has already pointed out that your frequent appearance at our regular meetings is earnestly solicited. To strengthen the request, give a man some work he can do. Get him involved. Some others will jump to the conclusion that this suggestion proposes changing or adding to the ritual. Oh, horrible innovation! 'Tain't necessarily so. Every worshipful master is charged to give his brethren good and wholesome instruction. Can he not give some personal instruction to the candidate at the end of the ceremonies of each degree, in which he invites the initiate to participate in the labors of the lodge, with specific suggestions about what he can do? Personal instruction. To implant the idea that the lodge expects something specific from him, the candidate must be led to expect such a requirement, even before he appears for the first degree. The master must learn, through the investigating committee or others, the skills, the professional competence, the involvements, the attitudes, the time at his disposal, and other commitments of the candidate, so that he can suggest a participation by the new member in specific activities of the lodge suited to his abilities and limitations. Of some, more can be expected than of others. Too few masters take the time and trouble to know the candidates that thoroughly and to tailor their expectations of the individual to his particular capabilities. But to expect nothing from the individual usually produces nothing, human nature being what it is. A lodge which does not make clear to a candidate that it expects some participation from him in the work of the lodge is more often than not merely making a member who will join the ranks of those who practically never attend the meetings. Their pride in being an active Mason hasn't been aroused. They have not been prompted to share in that noble contention, or rather emulation, of who best can work and best agree. If it is appropriate and honest to inform an applicant that he will be required to pay certain sums for fees and annual dues, it is equally appropriate to inform him at the same time that the lodge will expect him to participate in its meetings and activities. Such an idea should be implanted in his mind from the very beginning of his relationship with the lodge. Participation, of course, cannot be required or demanded. And never should the lodge's expectation be expressed in a dictatorial or aggressive manner. Such participation in the activities of those who best can work and best agree should always be an invitation, a challenge to a man's pride to enter into a noble contention or emulation. Even if he fails to respond to the challenge immediately, he should never be upbraided or scorned. He should be patiently and cheerfully challenged again and again and again. But he should know that the lodge expects his participation, because only by such participation will he become a genuine Master Mason. Of paramount importance, however, is the individualizing of that expectation for every particular brother. Freemasonry has always stressed the importance of the individual, but too many worshipful masters have failed to individualize the initiation and instruction for each candidate, no two of whom have ever been alike. Consequently, they depend entirely on the ritualistic work, often too carelessly or incompetently performed, to inspire the candidate to commit himself to a participation in the labors of the lodge. The result has too often been an impersonal, mediocre, going through the motions, which turns the candidate off. He needs to know what is expected of him, particularly of himself, not a vague, generalized hope that everyone will join in. That is a primary responsibility of the worshipful master, to make sure that the individual candidate gets the message that something is expected of him. That something must be specific and definite for the particular individual. He must be challenged to emulate others in working for the lodge by means of activities particularly suited to his interests and abilities. To learn these, the master and his officers must get all the information they can about the individual candidate, so that they can pinpoint areas of activity in which the new brother will find an interesting challenge and some satisfaction. It takes work, hard work, to individualize a man's initiatory experience in this way. But it is absolutely necessary if the lodge is to enjoy that noble contention, or rather emulation, of those who best can work and best agree. The message to the candidate, that the lodge expects some participation from him, should be given to him early, even before he appears at the lodge for the first degree. But it should be accompanied by an explanation of the lodge's activities, so that he may know what opportunities there are for exercising his talents and interests for the good of the lodge. He should know what committees are at work, what participation in degree work involves, what social events are scheduled for the year, and what other programs or activities need participants, whether they are musical, dramatic, instructional, etc. This also requires hard work on the part of the worshipful master, his officers, and committees. But it must be done, if the lodge is to stimulate a noble contention, or rather emulation, of those who best can work and best agree. As far as a new member is concerned, he should never be permitted to believe in the old adage, "Blessed is he who expects nothing, for he shall never be disappointed." He should be coming into the lodge, expecting something, and believing that something is expected of him. Like Brother Benjamin Franklin, he should be expecting to join a group of active men of affairs, men of intellect and spirit, men who are concerned about the issues and problems of the day, men who speculate about their implications and solutions. Franklin wanted to be a Mason because he believed the fraternity was a society of explorers of ideas, especially of the ideas which were stirring the revolutionary spirit of his time. Liberty, equality, and brotherhood. Franklin's expectation must have been realized. He quickly became a leader in Masonry. He must have found the stimulating discussions he was seeking. His natural talent for emulation made him not only a fraternal leader, it also made him a respected public servant and ambassador. Throughout a long and active life of service to the country he helped to declare free and independent, and whose constitution he helped to formulate, he always sought brother Masons with whom he could pursue the noble contention, or rather emulation, of those who best can work and best agree to establish freedom and equality for the genuine brotherhood of man. What do the brethren expect of Freemasonry? Much, worshipful master, or little. It depends on what you expect of them, and what you teach them to expect of the lodge. Finally, of course, it depends on how much noble contention, or rather emulation, you succeed in stimulating in your band or society of friends and brothers, who best will work and best agree.
This is Brother Michael A. Smith, a voice for Freemasonry, and this has been the Short Talk Bulletin, published monthly by the Masonic Service Association of North America since 1923, for the purpose of disseminating Masonic light, knowledge, history, and instruction to all the lodges of the constituent Grand Lodges of the Association. Content is presented here with permission.